This is the life, thought Acting Captain Colon. Hardly any paperwork was coming up here now, and by dint of much effort, he'd entirely cleared the backlog. It was a lot quieter, too. When Vimes was here, and Fred Colon suddenly found himself thinking the word Vimes without prefixing it with Mr., the main office was full of so much noise and bustle you could hardly hear yourself speak. Completely inefficient, that was. How could anyone hope to get anything done? He counted the sugar again. 29. But he'd had 2 in his tea, so that was all right. Toughness was paying off. Colon went and opened his door a fraction so that he could just see down into the office. It was amazing how you could catch them out that way. Quiet. And neat, too. Every desk was clear. Much better than the mess you used to get. He went back to the desk and counted the sugar lumps. There were 27. Aha! Someone was trying to drive him mad. Well, 2 could play at that game. He counted the lumps again. There were 26. And there was a knock at the door. This caused it to swing inwards, and Colon to jump up in evil triumph.
Aha! Burst in on me, eh? Oh!
The O was because the knocker was Constable Dorful the Golem. He was taller than the doorway and strong enough to tear a troll in half. He'd never done this, since he was an intensely moral being. But not even Colon was going to pick an argument with someone who had glowing red holes where his eyes should be. Ordinary golems would not harm a human because they had magic words in their head that ordered them not to. Dorful had no magic words, but he didn't harm people because he'd decided it wasn't moral. This left the worrying possibility that, given enough provocation, he might think again. Beside the golem was Constable Shue, saluting smartly.
"We've come to pick up the wages, Chitty, sir," he said.
"The what?"
"The wages, Chitty, sir. The monthly Chitty, sir. And then we take it to the palace and bring back the wages, sir."
"I don't know anything about that."
"I put it on your desk yesterday, sir. Signed by Lord Vetinari, sir."
Colon couldn't hide the flicker in his eyes. The black ash in the fireplace was by now overflowing. Shue followed his gaze.
"I haven't seen any such thing," said Colon,
while the colour drained from his face like a sucked ice lolly.
"I'm sure I did, sir," said Constable Shue. "I wouldn't forget a thing like that, sir. In fact, I distinctly remember saying to Constable Visit, 'Washpot, I'm just going to take this—'
"Look, you can see I'm a busy man," snapped Colon. "Get one of the sergeants to sort it out."
"There's no sergeants left except Sergeant Flint, sir, and he spends all his time going around asking people what he should be doing," said Constable Shue. "Anyway, sir, it's the senior officer who must sign the chitty."
Colon stood up, leaning on his knuckles, and shouted,
"Oh, I must, eh? That's a nerve and no mistake. Must, eh? Most of you lot are lucky anyone even gives you a job. Bunch of zombies and loonies and lawn ornaments and rocks. I've had it up to ear with you."
Shue leaned back out of range of the spittle.
"Then I'm afraid I must take this up with the Guild of Watchmen, sir," he said.
"Guild of Watchmen? Ha! And since when has there been a Guild of Watchmen?"
"Dunno. What's the time now?" said Corporal Nobbs, ambling into the room. "Got to be a couple of hours at least. Morning, Captain."
"What are you doing here, Nobby?"
"That's Mr. Nobbs to you, Captain, and I'm President of the Guild of Watchmen, since you ask."
"There's no such bloody thing."
"All legit, Captain. Registered at the palace and everything. Amazing how people rush to join, too."
He pulled out his grubby notebook.
"Got a few matters to take up with you if you have a moment." "Well, I say a few."
"I'm not putting up with this," bellowed Colon, his face crimson. "This is high treason. You're all sacked. You're all—"
"We're all on strike," said Nobby calmly.
"You can't go on strike while I'm sacking you."
"Our strike headquarters are in the back room of the Bucket in Gleam Street," said Nobby.
"Here, that's my boozer. I forbid you to go on strike in my own pub."
"We'll be there when you wish to talk terms. Come, brothers, we are now officially in a dispute situation."
They marched out.
"Don't bother to come back,"
Colon shouted after them. Bjonk wasn't what Vimes had expected. In fact, he'd find it hard to say what he had expected, except that this wasn't it. It occupied a narrow valley with a whitewater river winding through it. There were city walls. They were not like those of Ankh-Morpork, which had become at first a barrier to expansion and then a source of masonry for it. These had an inside and an outside. There were castles on the hills. There were castles on most hills in these parts. And there were high gates across the road. Detritus thumped on the side of the coach. Vimes stuck his head out.
"There's guys in the road," said the troll. "They got halibuts."
Vimes looked out of the windows. There were half a dozen guards, and they did indeed have halberds.
"What are they after?" he said.
"I expect they'll also want to see our papers and make a search of the coaches," said Inigo.
"Papers are one thing," said Vimes, getting out of the coach. "But no one is rummaging in our stuff. I know that trick. They're not looking for anything. They just want to show us who's boss. You come along and do the translating," he said. "Don't worry. I'll be diplomatic."
The two men barring the way did have helmets, and they were holding weapons, but their uniforms did not conform to normal uniformity. No guards, Vimes thought, should be dressed in red, blue, and yellow. People would be able to see them coming. Vimes liked a uniform you could lurk in. He pulled out his badge and held it up, advancing with an ingratiating smile.
"Just repeat this, Mr. Skimmer," Vimes raised his voice. "Hello, fellow officer. As you can see, I am commander of—"
A blade swung round. If Vimes hadn't stopped, he'd have walked into it. Inigo stepped forward, leather case already open, one hand holding several impressive pieces of paper, mouth already framing some suitable sentences. A guard took one of the pieces of paper and stared at it.
"This is a studied insult," said Inigo, contriving to speak out of the corner of his mouth while maintaining a smile. "Someone wishes to see how you react—"
"Them?"
"No, we're being watched."
The paper was handed back. There was a terse conversation.
"The captain of the guard says there are special circumstances and he will search the coaches," said Inigo.
"No," said Vimes, taking in the expression on the captain's white face. "I know when people are playing silly buggers, because I've done it myself."
He pointed to the door of the coach.
"See this?" he said. "Tell him this is an Ankh-Morpork crest. And this is an Ankh-Morpork coach, property of Ankh-Morpork. If they lay hands on it, that will constitute an act of war against Ankh-Morpork. Tell him that."
He saw the man lick his lips nervously as Inigo translated. Poor sod, he thought. He didn't ask for this. He was probably expecting a quiet day on the gate. But someone gave him some orders.
Inigo said, "He says he's very sorry, but those are his instructions, and he quite understands if His Grace wishes to make a complaint at the highest level."
A guard turned the handle of the coach door. Vimes slammed it shut.
"Tell him the war will start right now," he said, "and then it'll work its way up."
"Your Grace—"
The guards looked at Detritus. It was quite hard to hold the peacemaker nonchalantly, and he wasn't even making the attempt. Vimes maintained eye contact with the captain of the guard. If the man had any sense, he'd realize that if Detritus fired the thing, it had killed them all, besides sending the coach backwards at high speed. "Please, just let him have the sense to know when to fold," he prayed. In the corner of his ear, he could hear the guards whispering to one another. He caught the word "williness." The captain stepped back and saluted.
"He apologizes for any inconvenience and hopes you will enjoy your stay in his beautiful city," said Inigo. "He particularly hopes you will visit the Chocolate Museum in Prince Vodorny Square, where his sister works."
Vimes saluted.
"Tell him I think he is an officer with a great future," he said. "A future which, I trust, is going to very soon include opening the damn gates."
The captain had nodded to the men before Inigo was halfway through the translation.
"Aha." "And ask him his name," he said.
The man was bright enough not to respond until this had been translated.
"Captain Tantoni," Inigo said.
"I shall remember it," said Vimes. "Oh, and tell him he has a fly on his nose."
Tantoni won a prize. His eyes barely flickered. Vimes grinned. As for the town itself, it was just a town. Roofs were steeper than in Ankh-Morpork. Some maniac with a fret saw had been allowed to amuse himself on the wooden architecture, and there was more paint than you saw back home. Not that this told you anything. Many a rich man had become rich by metaphorically not painting his house. The coaches bowled over the cobbles. Not the right sort of cobbles, of course, Vimes knew that. The coach stopped again. Vimes stuck his head out the window. Two rather scruffier guards had barred the road this time.
"Ah, I recognise this one," said Vimes grimly. "I reckon that this time we've just met Kolonescu and Nobsky."
He stepped out and walked up to them.
"Well?"
The fatter of the two hesitated, and then held out his hand.
"Pisspot," he said.
"Inigo," said Vimes quietly, without turning his head. "Ah," said Inigo, after some muttered exchanges, "now the problem seems to be Sergeant Detritus. No trolls are allowed in this part of town during the hours of daylight, apparently, without a passport signed by their owner. In Bjonk, the only trolls allowed are prisoners of war. They have to carry identification."
"Detritus is a citizen of Ankh-Morpork and my sergeant," said Vimes.
"However, he is a troll. Perhaps, in the interest of diplomacy, you could write a short..."
"Do I need a piss pot?"
"A passport? No, Your Grace."
"Then he doesn't either."
"Nevertheless, Your Grace..."
"There is no nevertheless."
"But it may be advisable to..."
"There's no advisable either."
A few other guards had drifted over. Vimes was aware of watching eyes. "He could be ejected by force," said Inigo.
"Now there's an experiment I wouldn't want to miss," said Vimes.
Detritus made a rumbling noise.
"I don't mind going back if..."
"Shut up, Sergeant. You're a free troll. That's an order."
Vimes permitted himself another brief scan of the growing silent crowd, and he saw the fear in the eyes of the men with the halberds. They did not want to be doing this any more than the captain had.
"I'll tell you what, Inigo," he said. "Tell the guards that the ambassador from Ankh-Morpork commends them for their diligence, congratulates them on their dress sense, and will see that their instruction is obeyed forthwith. That should do it, shouldn't it?"
"Certainly, Your Grace."
"And now turn the coach around, Detritus. Coming, Inigo?"
Inigo's expression changed rapidly.
"We passed an inn about 10 miles back," Vimes went on. "Ought to make it by dark, do you think?"
"But you can't go, Your Grace." Vimes turned very slowly.
"Would you repeat that, Mr. Skimmer?"
"I mean..."
"We are leaving, Mr. Skimmer. What you do, of course, is up to you."
He sat down inside the coach. Opposite him, Sybil made a fist and said, "Well done!"
"Sorry, dear," said Vimes, as the coach turned. "It didn't look a very good inn."
"Serve them right, the little bullies," said Sybil. "You showed them."
Vimes glanced out and saw, at the edge of the crowd, a black coach with dark windows.
He could make out a figure in the gloom within. The luckless guards were looking at it, as if for instructions. It waved a gloved hand languidly. He started counting under his breath. After 11 seconds, Inigo trotted alongside the coach and jumped onto the running board. "Your Grace, apparently the guards acted quite without authority and will be punished."
"No, they didn't. I was looking at 'em. They'd been given an order," said Vimes.
"Nevertheless, diplomatically, it would be a good idea to accept the expen..."
"So that the poor buggers can be hung up by their thumbs," said Vimes. "No, you just go back and tell whoever's given the orders that all our people can go anywhere they like in this city, do you see? Whatever shape they are."
"I don't think you can actually demand that, sir."
"Those lads had old Burley and Strong in the arm weapons, Mr. Skimmer. Made in Ankh-Morpork. So did the men on the gate. Trade, Mr. Skimmer. Isn't that part of what diplomacy is all about? You go back and talk to whoever's in the black carriage, and then you'd better get them to lend you a horse, because I reckon we'll have gone a little way by then."
"You could, perhaps, wait."
"Wouldn't dream of it."
In fact, the coach was outside the gates of the town before Skimmer caught up with it again.
"There will not be a problem with either of your requests," he panted, and for a moment there appeared to be a touch of admiration in his expression.
"Good man. Tell Detritus to turn around again, would you?"
"You're grinning, Sam," said Sybil as Vimes sat back.
"I was just thinking that I could take to the diplomatic life," said Vimes.
"There is something else," said Inigo, getting into the coach. "There's some historical artefact owned by the dwarfs, and there's a rumour..."
"How long ago was the scone of stone stolen?"
Inigo's mouth stayed open. Then he shut it and his eyes narrowed.
"How in the world did you know that, Your Grace?"
"By the pricking of my thumbs," said Vimes, his face carefully blank. "I've got very odd thumbs when it comes to pricking."
"Really?"
"Oh, yes." Dogs had a much easier sex life than humans, Gaspard decided. That was something to look forward to, if he ever managed to have one. It wasn't going to start here, that was definite. The female wolves snapped at him if he came too close, and they weren't just warnings either. He was having to be very careful where he trod. The really odd thing about human sex, though, was the way it went on even when people were fully clothed and sitting on opposite sides of a fire. It was in the things they said and did not say, the way they looked at one another and looked away. The packs had changed again overnight. The mountains were higher, the snow was crisper. Most of the wolves were sitting at some distance from the fire Carrot had made. Just enough distance, in fact, to establish that they were proud, wild creatures who didn't have to rely on this sort of thing, but close enough to get the benefit. And then there was Gavin, sitting a little way off, turning to look from one to the other. "Gavin's people hate my family," Angua was saying. "I told you, it's always wolves who suffer when werewolves get too powerful. Werewolves are smarter at escaping from hunters. That's why wolves much prefer vampires. Vampires leave them alone. Werewolves sometimes hunt wolves."
"I'm surprised," said Carrot. Angua shrugged.
"Why? They hunt humans, don't they?
We're not nice people, Carrot. We're all pretty dreadful. But my brother Wolfgang is something special. Father's frightened of him, and so's Mother, if she'd only admit it. But she thinks he'll make the clan powerful, so she indulges him. He drove my other brother away and killed my sister."
"How?"
"He said it was an accident. Poor little Elsa. She was a Yenork, just like Andrei. That's a werewolf that doesn't change, you know? I'm sure I've mentioned it. Our family throws them up from time to time. Wolfgang and I were the only classic bimorphs in the litter. Elsa looked human all the time, even at full moon. Andrei was always a wolf."
"You mean you had a human sister and a wolf brother?"
"No, Carrot. They were both werewolves. But the, well, the little switch inside them didn't work. Do you understand? They stayed the same shape. In the old days, the clan would kill off a Yenok quickly. And Wolfgang is a traditionalist when it comes to nastiness. He says they made the blood impure. You see, a Yenok would go off and be a human or be a wolf, but they'd still be carrying the werewolf blood. And then they'd marry and have children or pups. And, well, that's where the fairy tale monsters come from. People with a bit of wolf and wolves with that extra capacity for violence that is so very human." She sighed and glanced momentarily at Gavin. But Elsa was harmless. After that, Andrei didn't wait for it to happen to him. He's a sheepdog over in Borogravia now. Doing well, I hear. Wins championships, she added sourly. She poked the fire aimlessly. Wolfgang's got to be stopped. He's plotting something with some of the dwarfs. They meet in the forest, Gavin says.
He sounds very well informed for a wolf, said Carrot.
Angua almost snarled at him. He's not stupid, you know. He can understand more than 800 words. A lot of humans get by on less. And he's got a sense of smell that's almost as good as mine. The wolves see everything. The werewolves are out all the time now. They're chasing people down. The game, we call it. The wolves get the blame. It looks like they're breaking the arrangement. And there's been these meetings, right out in the forest where they think no one will see them. Some dwarfs have got some sort of nasty scheme by the sound of it. They asked Wolfgang for help. That's like asking a vulture to pick your teeth.
What can you do? Said Carrot. Even your parents can't control him.
We used to fight when we were younger. Rough and tumble, he'd call it. But I could send him off howling. Wolfgang hates to think there's anyone who can beat him, so I don't think he'll relish the thought of me turning up. He's got plans. This part of Überwald has always, well, worked because no one was too powerful. But if the dwarfs start squabbling amongst themselves, then Wolfgang's the lad to take advantage, with his stupid uniforms and his stupid flag.
I don't think I want to see you fighting, though.
Then you can look the other way. I didn't ask you to follow me. Do you think I'm proud of this? I've got a brother who's a sheepdog.
A champion sheepdog, said Carrot earnestly.
Gaspard watched Angua's expression. It was one you'd never get on a dog.
"You mean that?" she said at last. "You actually mean it, don't you? You really do. And if you'd met him, it wouldn't worry you, would it? To you, everyone's a person. I have to sleep in a dog basket 7 nights a month, and that doesn't worry you either, does it?"
"No, you know it doesn't."
"It should do. Don't ask me why, but it should do. You're so unthinkingly nice about it. And sooner or later, a girl can have too much nice."
"I don't try to be nice."
"I know, I know. I just wish you'd, oh, I don't know, complain a bit. Well, not exactly complain, just sigh or something."
"Why?"
Because it'd make me feel better. Oh, it's too hard to explain. It's probably a werewolf thing."
"I'm sorry."
"And don't be sorry all the time, either."
Gaspode curled up so close to the fire that he steamed. Dogs had it a lot better, he decided. The building that was to be the embassy was set back from the road in a quiet side street. They rattled under an arch into a small rear courtyard containing some stables. It reminded Vimes of a large coaching inn.
"It's really only a consulate at the moment," said Inigo, leafing through his papers. "We should be met by, ah, yes, Wando Sleeps. Been here for several years."
Behind the coaches, a pair of gates swung shut. There was the sound of heavy bolts shooting home. Vimes stared at the apparition that came limping back towards the coach door.
"He looks it," he said.
"Oh, I don't think this is
a good evening, masters, mistress," said the figure. "Welcome to Ankh-Morpork. I'm Igor."
"Igor who?" said Inigo.
"Just Igor, sir. Always just Igor," said Igor calmly, unfolding the step. "I'm the odd job man."
"You don't say," said Vimes, mesmerized.
"Have you had a terrible accident?" said Lady Sybil.
"I did spill tea down my throat this morning," said Igor. "Kind of you to notice."
"Where's Mr. Sleeps?" said Inigo.
"I'm afraid Master Sleeps is nowhere to be found. I was rather hoping you would know what had happened to him."
"Us?" said Inigo. "We assumed he was here."
"He left rather urgently 2 weeks ago, said Igor. "He did not vouchsafe to me where he was going. Do go inside, and I will see to the baggage."
Vimes glanced up. A little bit of snow was falling now, but there was enough light to see that above them, across the whole courtyard, was an iron mesh. With the bolted doors and the walls of the building all around, they were in a cage.
"Just a little leftover from the old days," said Igor cheerfully. "Nothing to worry about, sir."
"What a fine figure of a man," said Sybil weakly as they stepped inside.
"More than one man by the look of him."
"Sam?"
"Sorry, I'm sure his art's in the right place."
"Good."
"Or someone's art, anyway."
"Sam, really?"
"All right, all right. But you must admit he does look a bit odd."
"None of us can help the way we're made, Sam."
"He looks as if he tried."
"Good grief." "Oh, dear," said Lady Sybil.
Vimes was not against hunting, if only because Ankh-Morpork seldom offered any better game than the large rats you got along the waterfront. But the sight of the walls of the new embassy might have been enough to make the keenest hunter take a step back and cry, "Oh, I say, hold on." The previous occupant had been keen on hunting, shooting, and fishing, and to have covered every single wall with the resultant trophies, he must have been doing all three at the same time. Hundreds of glass eyes, obscenely alive in the light of the fire in the huge hearth, stared down at Vimes.
"It's just like my grandfather's study," said Lady Sybil. "There was a stag's head in there that used to frighten the life out of me."
"There's just about everything here." "Oh, no."
"By gods," whispered Lady Sybil.
Vimes looked around desperately. Detritus was just entering, carrying some of the trunks.
"Stand in front of it," Vimes hissed. "I'm not that tall, Sam, or that wide."
The troll looked up at them, then at the trophies, and then grinned. "It's colder up here," Vimes thought. "He's quicker on the uptake." Detritus's silicon-based brain was, as with most trolls, highly sensitive to changes in temperature. When the thermometer was very low, he could be dangerously intellectual. Even Nobby won't play poker with him in the winter.
Damn!
"'Something wrong?' said Detritus.
Vimes sighed. What was the point? He'd spot it sooner or later.
"'I'm sorry about this, Detritus,' he said, standing aside.
Detritus looked at the horrible trophy and nodded.
"'Yeah, there used to be a lot of that sort of thing in the old days,'
he said calmly, putting down the luggage.
"'They wouldn't be the real diamond teeth, of course. They'd take them out and put bigger glass ones in.'
"'You don't mind?' said Lady Sybil. "'It's a troll's head. Someone actually mounted a troll's head and put it on the wall.'
"'Ain't mine,' said Detritus.
"'But it's so horrible.'
Detritus stood in thought for a moment, and then opened the stained wooden box that contained all he had felt it necessary to bring.
"'This is the old country, after all,' he said. "'So if it'd make you feel better—'
He pulled out a smaller box and rummaged among what appeared to be bits of rock and cloth, until he found something yellowy-brown and round, like a shallow cup.
"'Should have bunged it away,' he said. "'But it's all I got to remember my old granny by. She kept things in it.'
"'It's a bit of human skull, isn't it?' said Vimes at last.
"'Yep.
Whose?'
"'Anyone asked that troll dare his name?' said Detritus,
and the glint in his voice had a brittle edge to it for a moment. Then he carefully put the bowl away.
"'Things were different in them days. Now you don't chop our heads off, and we don't make drums out of your skin. Everything is hunky-dory. That's all we have to know.'
He picked up the boxes again, and followed Lady Sybil towards the staircase. Vimes took another look at the trophy head. The teeth were longer, far longer than they'd be on a real troll. A hunter had to be very brave, and very lucky, to go up against a fighting troll and survive. It'd be so much easier to go after an old one, and later replace the ground-down stumps with sparkly fangs. My gods, the things we do!
"'Igor,' he said, as the odd job man lurched past under the weight of two more bags.
"'Yes, your excellency?'
"'I'm an excellency,' said Vimes to Inigo.
"'Yes, your grace.'
"'And still my grace as well?'
"'Yes, your grace. You are his grace, his excellency, the Duke of Ankh, Commander Sir Samuel Vimes, your grace.'
"'Hang on, hang on. His grace cancels out the sir, I know that. It's like having an ace in poker.'
"'Strictly speaking, this is true, your grace, but great store is set by titles here, and it is best to play with a full deck.
"'I was once blackboard monitor at school,' said Vimes sharply, "'for a whole term. Would that help?' Dame Venting said no one could clean a blackboard like me.
A useful fact, your grace, which may possibly be helpful in the event of a tie-break,
said Inigo, his face carefully blank.
We, Igor, have always preferred master, said Igor. What was it you were requiring?
Vimes gestured towards the heads that covered every wall.
I want them taken down as soon as possible. I can do this, can't I, Mr. Skimmer?
"'You are the ambassador, sir.
"'Well, they're coming down, all of them.'
Igor gave the camphor-smelling multitude a worried look.
"'Even the swordfish?'
"'Even the swordfish,' said Vimes firmly.
"'And the snow leopards?'
"'Both of them, yes.'
"'What about the troll?'
"'Especially the troll. See to it.'
Igor could have been said to have looked as if his world had fallen down around his ears, were it not for the fact that he already looked as if this had happened.
"'What do you want to do with them, master?'
"'That's up to you. Throw them in the river, maybe. Ask Detritus about the troll. Maybe it should be buried or something. Is there any supper?'
"'There's fresh walago,
a kind of pastry made from curtains.
A noggi.
Buckwheat dumplings stuffed with stuff.
Sklot.
Bread made from parsnips, and widely considered to be much tastier than the dull wheat kind.
"'Swine, flesh, and sausages,'
said Igor, still clearly upset about the trophies.
"'I'll stop tomorrow if her ladyship gives me instructions.'
"'Is swine flesh the same as pork?' said Vimes.
People in drought-stricken areas would have paid good money to have Igor pronounce sausages.
"'Yes,' said Inigo.
"'And what's in the sausages?'
Meat?
Said Igor, looking as though he was ready to run.
Good. We'll give them a try.
Vimes went upstairs and followed the sound of conversation until he reached a bedroom, where Sybil was laying clothes on a bed the size of a small country. Cheery was assisting her. The walls were carved panels of wood. The bed was carved panels of wood. And the mad fretworker had been hard at work here, too. Only the floors weren't wood. They were stone, and radiated cold.
"It's a bit like the inside of a cuckoo clock, isn't it?" said Sybil. "Cheery has volunteered to be my lady's maid for now."
Cheery saluted. "Why not?" said Vimes. After a day like this, a lady's maid with a long flowing beard seemed perfectly normal.
"The floors are a bit chilly, though. Tomorrow I'll measure up for some carpets," said Sybil firmly. "I know we won't be here long, but we ought to leave something for the next people."
"Yes, dear, that would be a good idea."
"There's a bathroom through there," said Sybil, nodding. "There's hot springs near here, apparently. They pipe them in. You'll feel better for a hot bath."
10 minutes later, Vimes was happy to agree. The water was a funny colour, and smelled a little of what he would politely call bad eggs, but it was good and hot, and he could feel it drawing the tension out of his muscles. The distressing scent of second-hand baked beans sloshed around him as he lay back. At the other end of the huge bath, the lump of pumice stone that he'd been using to rasp the dead skin off his feet banged against the side. Vimes watched it unseeing while he filed the thoughts of the day.